Wow. It's been a while.
It has been a long time.
Yeah, we haven't kicked Kevin out of the studio forever.
Yeah, we kicked him pretty far this time.
Where'd he go?
He went to Nepal. He's going to South Korea and the Philippines to go and help strengthen the churches over there. So he's a whirlwind tour. Just 2 weeks, I think, he's going to be gone. But they only gave us two shows.
Two shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's because they know us so well.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but yeah, it's been really a long time. How are things going with you?
Better than I deserve. And how about you?
Yeah, same here. Same here. So yeah, things have a lot of things have changed since we saw each other last.
Yes, they have. You have embarked on a new endeavor, have you not?
Yeah, I've been for the last couple of years been looking at trying to sell my nursing business. I've been doing it for 20 years, and there's so many more interests that I've had that I've wanted to dip my fingers in those types of things. And so I had to make a choice between either just putting my whole life back into the nursing business, because it needs to grow. It's something that can grow and needs to grow, needs constant management, or pour myself in the other interests that I have, like in speech and debate and food and
coffee. You know,
coffee. Yeah. And other things like that. I want to do some more speaking if I can. I'd like to do some writing, maybe some acting, some voice acting. And one of the things I'm actually looking at possibly doing is writing and performing a one-man show on the life of Peter.
Really?
Yeah. So I got my inspiration came from Dean Jones. Remember Dean Jones?
Yes. He was a Disney kind of actor and family style actor. And
Yeah. But his actual personal life was a mess back in those days. Alcoholism and drugs and women and all of that. But God saved him. And he began to do all kinds of acting in the Christian realm and was in, I think it was the Book of Acts, the Visual Bible series, where they just do the Bible verses right out of the Bible and act them out. And he played the part of Luke in Acts. But he also did another show that was called St. John in Exile. I think it's on Amazon. If you have Amazon Prime, you can watch that for free. It's about an hour and a half long show, and it's just him. And he's on like this little prison area in the Isle of Patmos, and he talks about John. He becomes John, talks about his life and what's going on and how he's writing letters and sending out information to the churches to try to encourage the churches. And a lot of people can identify with John, but I think more people can identify with Peter.
And how so? So,
well, Peter, he was this guy who just put his foot in his mouth a lot. He would speak without thinking. Have you ever done that?
You mean today?
And back in the day, back in those days, every parent wanted at least one of their sons, if not all of their sons, to become rabbis. And so they would learn, beginning at the age of four, they'd begin to learn the first five books of the Bible, beginning with Leviticus. And they would have to memorize all of that, because in Leviticus it says, without the shedding of blood, there's no remission of sins. And so they need to know the sacrificial system and all of those things. And they would then memorize the first five books. And when they got to that point, when they were about 12 or 13 years old, they would go and become bar mitzvah, which is the son of the law. They would become a son of the law. They would understand those first five books. They could say them frontwards, backwards, sideways. The parents would also choose a rabbi that they'd want their son to be tutored under, to become like that rabbi. And so after they were bar mitzvahed, then they would go to this rabbi and they would say, "Can I be like you?" And the rabbi would make sure that they'd memorized their scriptures and all of that. Then the rabbi would have them, have the student, ask him questions. And if they could ask good questions, then the rabbi would say, "Come, follow me." And they would run home, they'd pack everything, they'd say, "I'm going to follow my rabbi," and they would go and live with that rabbi for the next about 17 years.
Wow.
And they would then, the blessing of the time was that may you be covered in the dust of your rabbi. They would walk so closely behind their rabbi. They would learn how to talk like him, how to eat like him, how to make all of the gestures and speak like them. They were to become just like this rabbi. The rabbi wanted to multiply himself and all these students.
And if they were not accepted,
then they would say, I'm sorry, you can't be like me. Maybe your son will be like me. Go be about your daddy's business.
And then they would follow in the footsteps of their
earthly parent. Father. Yeah. Right. And so Peter and James and John and all of these people who were fishermen, and Matthew, who was a tax collector, probably not following after his father, these all had been initially rejected by their rabbi. And so when Jesus, the rabbi of all rabbis, came to them and said, come, follow me, those were the words that they had longed to hear from the time that they, you know, when they were 13, that they were rejected. No wonder they dropped everything. Wow. And followed Jesus.
And that's what Jesus does. He takes the rejects and he restores them and makes them new and makes them whole. And then he makes them like he is.
Yeah.
And that's what happened with Peter.
Yeah.
But Peter's road was a bit bumpy.
Yeah. He didn't learn how to swear and curse warming his hands by the fire. That was just how he was brought up. He was rough. He was gruff. He was a fisherman. And worked hard and, you know, labored hard with his hands. His attitude, I think, was always the same. You know, I don't know if he really even thought he could ever become a rabbi. My guess is that he really knew that he couldn't. And so I doubt if he put his whole heart and effort into that. I think he put his effort into fishing. And so when Jesus called him, it was like, do I dare even have this chance? Same with Matthew. When Jesus came to him at the tax collection table and said, come follow me, no wonder he dropped everything and went with Jesus. It's just an amazing story. And how Peter denied Jesus three times and then was restored. It's interesting that there's a term, charcoal fire, that is only mentioned twice in the New Testament. The first one was when Peter was warming his hands when he denied Jesus. And charcoal back then had a very pungent smell. It was very unique. It would, you know, almost burn your nose to smell it. And so Peter denied Jesus three times while warming his hands under a charcoal fire. And then after the resurrection, and they, what do we do? Well, let's go fishing. They went out fishing, and they see this guy on the shore saying, hey, cast your nets to the other side. And they cast their nets, pulling this huge haul of fish. And John says, it's the Lord. And Peter tucks himself in, jumps out into the water, swims to shore. As he's coming up on the shore, Jesus is cooking breakfast on a charcoal fire.
Wow.
And smell is one of those things that brings back memories. That's why real estate agents will cook cookies, bake cookies or bread before they show a house, because it reminds you of home.
Right.
And as soon as he walks up on shore and gets that whiff of the charcoal fire, that would have made him remember the time that he rejected Jesus. And Jesus then restored him. Do you love me? Do you love me? Do you love me? And restored Peter with the three questions of do you love me, as Peter had denied him three times. He said, you feed my sheep. You feed my sheep. You take care of my sheep.
It's hard to imagine Christian pastors going to jail for their faith. And it's just as hard to imagine Christian businessmen fined $135,000 for not baking a cake in celebration of a homosexual wedding. It's hard to imagine America turning into a communist state that persecutes Christians and rewards the most aberrant. Will Christians just let it happen? Should Christians just let it happen? These are important questions, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson, and I wrote the book on freedom because I wanted to build a case for freedom. A biblical case. A historical case. And let me tell you, the history of freedom is the most inspiring story you'll ever read. Have you heard the story of the Magna Carta, Bannockburn, Leyden, and William the Silent, the American Pilgrims, and the Battle for King's Mountain? How will we fight for freedom in this generation and the next? Well, tell the story first, the story of freedom. Let's leave a legacy for freedom for our children and our grandchildren. Get a copy of the new book, Freedom for Each of Your Children and Grandchildren, at generations.org. That's generations.org.
I guest direct for another organization called Team Pact.
Okay.
And Team Pact does government and political process classes at state capitals around the country during the spring season, during the legislative season. And they need guest directors. They need graybeards who look like they're in charge.
Yeah.
They train their staff very well, and they do most of the teaching. But I get to guest direct. And I was just in New Mexico. And it was a bittersweet time for me because I love going to New Mexico. I love the state. I love the people there. I love doing that class in Santa Fe. But Santa Fe is a very dark place.
Really? Why is that?
It's a very New Age-centered place. It's a very affluent place. And the legislature there is very liberal. New Mexico is probably one of the most pro-abortion states in the nation.
Wow.
And there was a bill proposed. It was actually to do away with a law that's on the books in New Mexico that prohibits abortion, oddly enough.
Wow.
But because of Roe v. Wade, that law is negated.
Yeah.
But the Democrats now control all three branches of government in New Mexico strongly. And they're concerned that the Supreme Court, United States Supreme Court, might overturn Roe v. Wade. And so in anticipation of that, what they decided to do was to revoke that state law. Now, it would not only just make abortion legal, period, at whatever state in the pregnancy, up to the time of birth, but also it would force healthcare providers to participate in abortion despite their rights of conscience. It would do away with the rights of conscience. And so there was a big debate. And one of the things I get to do is I get to train students to ask tough questions. You mentioned that a potential student for a rabbi would be encouraged to ask him tough questions. And then the rabbi would determine whether he was a worthy student.
Yes.
That is one of my goals in training students at Teen Pack classes, because they get to hear from legislators. And I recall one of the legislators, Senator Cervantes, who came in and was very charming, Democratic senator. He claimed to be moderate. He said it several times. But when the students started asking him tough questions about the abortion bill, about his position on pro-life, about the extreme part of the party and why he allowed them to overrun the moderates, and then ask him why, if you claim to be at odds with the extremists, why are you not a Republican? And, you know, how do you resolve your position on abortion with your Catholic faith, which he promoted? He did not answer a single question. And again, he was charming, he was disarming, he was likable, personable. You would like him as a person. Okay? But after he left, I had a chance to debrief the students, and I made a point of saying, what you just did was look into the face of evil. Evil does not come to you with horns and a pitchfork. Evil comes to you in a suit. Evil comes to you with a charming personality. Evil comes to you much like the snake in Jungle Book.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
You know, just come to me. Just come to me. Just give a little. Just compromise a little.
Yeah.
And that is the problem. If we compromise just a little, then we can get along with the world. It's that warming ourselves by the charcoal fire of the world. And then when we're asked, do you know him? We're tempted to say, well,
I'm
looking out for myself. And to the point where we end up cursing what is right and what is good and what is true. And that is what I see in our culture. I see Christians compromising because we want to get along. And we love to be liked.
Yeah.
We want to be respected. We don't want to be called names. And so we heed the call, that little, come to me. Just compromise. Don't be so rigid. And that is the problem. And so we need to be more like Peter after the second charcoal fire.
Yes.
Non-compromising.
Yeah.
Okay. Even to the point of, you know, being rough and not refined.
Yeah.
We need to stand for truth and justice and righteousness and not compromise. And I am concerned that in our culture, we're seeing the compromise of the church because we are becoming more like the culture. Rather than transforming the culture, we're becoming more like the culture.
Yeah, there's a picture in the book of Revelation, however you want to see how that book is, but there are two lambs in the book of Revelation. There's the one in Revelation 4 and 5, the lambs that just been slain. And then there's a lamb that's a little bit later. In the Greek language, it says, and out of the water came a dear little lamb, but it had no marks of sacrifice.
Hmm.
And so that dear little lamb is like, oh, you know, that's so sweet. But then when he spoke like the dragon. But you had to listen. How do you know which lamb you're talking about? Are you talking about the one as it had been slain that approached the throne of God to present his blood not only as the high priest but as a sacrifice? Or are you looking at the counterfeit church, the religion that looks so right? And yet has no sacrifice to it.
Yeah,
that is what is being presented. This bill, the 1032 that came up, that is pushing LGBT, teaching the sex practices to fourth graders, nine-year-olds on up.
In Colorado here.
In Colorado, yeah. Is being sponsored by none other than my two representatives, Janet Buckner, my representative, and Nancy Todd, our senator, who both claim to be Christian.
Yeah, she spoke, Nancy Todd spoke to the Teen Pack class here in Colorado last year, and she was not happy with the questions that the students asked her.
I bet not.
She was pressed hard by the students, and I would love to have her come back and speak again because one of the joys I get is training students to ask tough questions, to cut through the compromise, to cut through all of the niceties that surround the politicians and coat them in a sugar flavor that is easy to swallow, yeah. But then it's poison. And so this is one of the joys I have is training students to ask tough questions. And I hope they are covered by the dust of Jesus.
Oh yeah.
That they get so close that they think and speak and act as he does.
Yes. And that's another thing that I do. One of the things I really enjoy doing is coaching speech and debate. And in our debate class, that's one of the things we'll do too, is to teach them how to ask good questions in cross-examination. How can you get the admissions without coming out? You know, so you wouldn't go to one of these false religions and say, are you evil? Because they're going to say, oh, no, I'm good. But you can ask them questions that will expose they're evil.
Right.
Jesus asked great questions. It's interesting that in the New Testament, Jesus asked like 360-some questions and answered 50.
Huh.
And so he was more concerned about asking questions. It's interesting that when we find him at the age of 12, he's in the temple.
Right.
What's he doing? He's asking questions.
Right.
And the rabbis and the people in the temple were amazed at how he could ask questions.
One of the things that I train students to do, the first question they need to ask any legislator, any elected official when they show up and speak before this group is, do you fear God?
Yes, that is a great question.
And that reveals the heart. It reveals where these people are despite their profession of faith.
Mm-hmm.
It reveals where they are, and it will expose their agenda.
And so why do you ask, do you fear God? What's the purpose?
Because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom.
Right.
It is the requirement of a magistrate that he fears God and he does not take bribes.
Yeah.
And we see with recent events in New York and in Virginia that those who have promoted the pro-abortion agenda, for example, were in the pocket of Planned Parenthood and they've taken bribes.
Yeah.
The blood is upon their hands. And we need to raise up a generation who are willing to ask tough questions. And that's why I encourage them to get involved in speech and debate, to get involved with Teen Pack, to get involved with Worldview Academy, to send their students to places where there are, if you will, rabbis who will train them to think God's thoughts after him and then to act in accord with a biblical worldview. Hey, it's been good to be back with you on this edition of Generations Radio, and we're looking forward to another one pretty soon.
Yeah, so how can they get in touch with you for, like, Worldview Academy?
It's worldview.org. We do camps all across the country during the summer. We also do a two-semester bridger program for students who are out of high school and want to get grounded in their faith. We do that down in Canyon City, Colorado. It's a residential program. And they can receive up to 30 hours of transferable credit through Trinity International University. So they can get grounded in their faith before they hit their career or their college experience. So worldview.org, we would love to have your student come and be part of a week-long training in worldviews, evangelism and apologetics, and servant leadership skills.
Yeah, and if you're wanting to get your children, your kids involved in speech and debate, there's two national organizations. There's the NCFCA, and I think that you can find them on ncfca.org, and these are in pretty much all of the states, and then the one that we belong to, that Colorado's involved in, is STOA, and you can look for clubs on stoausa.org. If you're in the Colorado area, you can look up Rocky Mountain STOA and find the clubs that are involved in Colorado. But these are the United States. There's about 4,000 or so families that are involved in each organization, and they hold tournaments. And one of the things that we do with STOA is
stoausa.org.
And there's a list of clubs that if you put your name in, then there's a list of clubs throughout all the different states that STOA is involved in. And if you don't have one, start your own club, which what I did. I ended up doing that about 11, 12 years ago and started my own club. And now it's built up to quite a club. And I'm also now on the National Policy Debate Committee. I help to write the rules and write the resolutions for each year. But these are two great organizations, and we don't train so that you can compete. We use competition as part of the training field. One of the pictures I like to try to convey is that we are a bunch of knights and squires in God's army, and we were there jousting each other and training each other in order to build each other up, in order to fight the true battle that is out there in the world. Our battle is not against flesh and blood, but it's against all of these ideas and philosophies and principalities that are being brought forth by the Lamb that had not been slain.